presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we're going to do things just a little bit different today than we typically do. I'm going to have a guest come on the show a little earlier than I normally would in the broadcast. The reason why is this. It's going to be Mike Griffith, our buddy from DogNation.com, here in just a moment. My topic for today is I've come up with a list of five Georgia players, and they're all draft eligible for the upcoming season, who I think of as swing players for UGA. If you get a big performance, a step up in production from these five players, you have a chance, I think, to put Georgia squarely in the national championship conversation. In fact, it could be the difference between winning it and simply contending for it. I've got five names that I want to give you. But on video, when this topic came up a little earlier, Mike wanted to try to guess the names, and he actually did pretty well at guessing my names on this. So I thought that kind of worked as a device. So in a moment, we'll bring on Mike, and he'll begin the process of trying to guess these names. And I'm hopeful that you'll kind of guess along with him. You'll play along here today to see how your list kind of looks like mine. Now, as a way of making sense of all of this, I have to kind of explain a couple of things here. There are like three stipulations that I'm making in terms of the five names that I come up with, and I think this is going to make sense for you. Here's the first assumption I'm going to make, which eventually leads me to get to the five names who I kind of think of as swing players, potential difference makers in terms of a national championship. I'm going to operate on the assumption that Georgia is going to get some elite play from some very impressive freshmen and sophomores. And you can look no further than last year's national champion to see an example of this. As I've cited now a couple of times on our show this week, LSU not only had 14 players drafted, they had 10 drafted in the first three rounds. And I think that number is kind of the working number you want to think about from Georgia's standpoint. Can Georgia find 10 top three round draft picks, guys taken on Thursday and Friday? In order to get to 10, you have to have a few guys sort of step up their level of play. That's kind of the working theory on all of this. And LSU, even though it had the 14 draft picks, even though it had the 10 guys drafted in the first three rounds, even with all that said, arguably, LSU's two best players were not draft eligible a year ago, or I should say among LSU's best players were guys who were not draft eligible. Jamar Chase was the Biletnikoff Award winner as the nation's best wide receiver. He was just a sophomore last year. Derek Stingley, I believe, was rightly the nation's best defensive back, even though a lot of people thought of Stingley's teammate Grant Delpit as being that. I believe it was Stingley who was the country's best defensive back, and he was just a freshman. So LSU's a perfect example of this, that even with a bunch of draft guys for a really talented, deep SEC-level roster, some of your best players are still going to be freshmen and sophomores, guys who are not yet draft eligible. That's obviously expected to be true for Georgia this upcoming season. Easy names to mention: George Pickens on offense, he'll just be a sophomore. Nolan Smith on defense, he'll just be a sophomore. Next level, guys like N'Kobe Dean, Dominic Blaylock, or maybe Kendall Milton. These are guys who are not draft eligible yet, but they're clearly among the best players in the Georgia roster. We're going to assume that those guys have a very good year because you can't win a national championship at Georgia if they don't. The next assumption we're going to make is that Georgia on paper right now probably has four guys who are likely to be selected in the first three rounds. And I'm basing this on some of the early 2021 mock drafts that are out there. And mock drafts can be wrong, notoriously wrong, in fact, the earlier they come out. But nonetheless, we're going to use these as a guide. The four guys that I think have a very good chance of being top three round picks next year, top 100 draft picks, sort of in some form or fashion. I'm going to give you the quarterback, Jamie Newman, based on the early projections for him, and I'm going to give you three defensive backs. The easiest to select is safety Richard LeCount. For the most part, he's been a fixture in early 2021 mock drafts thus far, and I think that you've got a very strong likelihood of two defensive backs. Tyson Campbell, if he chooses to leave, I think could be selected in the first three rounds on the basis of his athleticism, the fact that he's probably played better than you realize in 2019 before he dealt with the injury that he dealt with. And then the other guy is the other cornerback, Eric Stokes. I think those four guys have a very good chance of being top three round picks next year. Quarterback Jamie Newman and the three defensive backs. The third stipulation I'm going to make here is, on the basis of the track record of the last 3 years, I'm going to assume that Georgia has a at least good offensive line, if not very good offensive line. The average performance of 2017, 2018, 2019, the composite of those 3 years, suggests that Georgia should still be in pretty good shape from an offensive line standpoint, even with a bunch of new starters and even with a new offensive line coach. So between, like, say, Trey Hill and Jamari Salyer and Ben Cleveland, Cleveland obviously the most experienced, the oldest of those guys, between that trio, Georgia's probably going to be in pretty good hands. New starters will also emerge there as well. There's a chance that Justin Schaefer makes a name for himself. But one way or another, I'm going to assume the Georgia offensive line is a given. So are you with me thus far? We're assuming big-time play from Georgia freshmen and sophomores. We're assuming that Georgia already has four top three-round picks in next year's NFL draft. Quarterback Newman on the basis of the projections, what we've seen from Campbell, Stokes, and LeCount. From that standpoint, if Georgia wants to match what LSU did last year and kind of really put itself squarely in the national championship conversation, you've got to have five guys from that draft-eligible group for next year who really raise their level of play. In a moment, Mike Griffith is going to try to guess my list, and I want you to work along the same way to see if you can guess the five names that I'm thinking about. Before we do that, though, let me remind you, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. My name is Brandon Adams, and I'm really glad to have you with us. We are, as I said before, on video every morning at 10 a.m. We love being able to do that with you. Radio, of course, at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. That's always a lot of fun. And here as podcast as well. The podcast audience, the fact that you guys keep showing up and keep being with us each and every day, man, I am so thankful for that. And hopefully we're doing a good job of delivering some fun content for you during this time. By the way, before we get Mike Griffith, let me also give a quick shout out to my friends at the UGA Alumni Association. They're doing great work right now, helping facilitate the money that can make a difference at UGA as UGA impacts the current students and the world in the future. So when you contribute right now, when you show your pride in UGA by contributing to the UGA Alumni Association, you can help fund the Student Emergency Fund that takes care of students who find themselves in harm's way right now because of the coronavirus or anything else. They may be off campus right now in a home environment that's not certain. Job loss, loss of health, all kinds of issues. The Student Emergency Fund supports students who find themselves in that situation, and the UGA Alumni Association invites you to help fund it. Also, by supporting the research that's being done by UGA scientists, you know, therapeutics, a vaccine for the COVID-19 virus, eventually they will be found, and there's plenty of reason to believe that Georgia scientists and researchers could be on the forefront of all of that, but good research requires money. And the UGA Alumni Association is inviting you to show your pride in UGA by helping support that at the moment. You can also become a mentor as well for UGA students about to graduate, enter the job market, more uncertain than it's ever been before. You certainly understand that. And when you share your expertise by becoming a mentor, you help sort of ease UGA graduates into the world they're about to inherit. A very, very important thing to do. So the website to go to kind of get involved with the UGA Alumni Association, the great work it's doing to support UGA, simply this website, alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. I'll read it one more time. alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. You can get involved as the University of Georgia stands at the forefront of the battle against the coronavirus. All right, a little earlier than normal, let's get into a guess. Mike Griffith going to try to guess my five swing players that could make the difference for Georgia winning the national championship this upcoming season. Guess along with them to see how many you can get.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I'll bring in Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily right now. Mike, thanks for being here. I know you've written a lot about the draft and already kind of looking ahead to what's going to happen in 2021. And by 2021, I mean the NFL draft. I know you're just as eager as me to see how some of these Georgia guys who kind of have their day in the sun, how they're going to perform for this upcoming year.
Yeah, I'm with you, BL. I like your analysis there. I'm with you on those guys as potential first-rounders, particularly if Eric Stokes adds that weight like Richard LeCount did the last offseason. That's the only thing missing from Stokes. Coverage skills are amazing. He's going to test out the combine. But I would agree. I want to get to the swing players because I think we're looking at some of the same guys as potential swing players. And don't forget, a redshirt sophomore is also eligible for the draft. So you got a couple of those guys that could be picked.
Okay, so we'll do this. This will be fun. I've got five names who I think are swing players. If they fully develop, take the next step with their progression, then this could be a national championship difference for Georgia. I've got five names. You want to guess one of them?
All right. I'm going to say that number one is Zamir White.
So I don't have them ranked necessarily. I just have them as names. But Zamir White is one of my guys. And Mike, I'm going to let you talk more about Zamir, but I'll set it up by saying this. This is as little preseason conversation about Georgia running backs as we've had in any year predating Todd Gurley's arrival at Georgia almost a full decade ago. And I think all you need for Zamir to do is be a typical Georgia running back. And you know by now what a typical Georgia running back is. That's about all you need. If Zamir is a typical Georgia running back, then he could be a first three-round type of player for the upcoming NFL draft next spring. And if that's the case, that's really good news for Georgia. The reason why some people might wonder, well, is that kind of season in the cards for Zamir? It's obviously the two ACL injuries. It's the uncertainty of not really seeing him in that role last year. Those are the reasons why people might have questions about that. But if Zamir is a typical Georgia running back, he's a top three round pick next year, and Georgia would take that next step towards being a true championship contender. What are your thoughts on Zamir?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Zamir is where was he at with the treatment, BA? You know, some of those guys were getting treatment every day, and because of COVID-19, they're not here to do that, to my knowledge. I don't know that Zamir is one of the guys that's been in Athens that has access to these world-class facilities and these great trainers. So my biggest question is how is Zamir doing with or without treatment? And, you know, that's so big. What these guys are doing away from campus right now, when they would normally be in a program where they would have that supervision, they would have that guidance, because we know how hard Zamir trains. I just hope he's doing well with the treatment, because I really thought I saw some sparks in the Sugar Bowl. I saw him with a little bit of wiggle, really, for the first time. BA, it looked like he got comfortable making some moves. You know, there was a silver lining, Brian Herrien not being allowed to play in that game. Zamir was able to get some snaps and be the lead dog in that game, and I thought he made the most of it. I think he needs to take another step just like you. But my biggest question with Zamir is, how does COVID-19 layoff affect him, a guy that we know worked very hard but also was very responsible in terms of staying in the training room and getting that treatment?
Mike, the other comparison we've made on this show with Zamir a lot is what happened with Nick Chubb in 2016, then to 2017. In 2014, Nick Chubb was an unbelievable highlight package of running the football. Obviously, gets hurt near the beginning of the 2015 season. And in 2016, while being a 1,000-yard rusher, was not necessarily the most explosive player, or certainly not as explosive as he had been in 2014. The version of Chubb we saw in 2017 was a lot more similar to what we had seen from Chubb pre-injury. Maybe not exactly the same, but a lot more similar. I think for me and other Georgia fans, the hope here for Zamir is, can you have a similar Nick Chubb-like progression? Last season was 1 year removed from that second ACL injury. This year is another year removed from that. And do we see a level of explosiveness from Zamir that we didn't really see a year ago?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we also got to wonder, BA, what does the new offense look like? What's the role going to be? And to your point, you need him to be like a typical Georgia back, but it's not going to be a typical Georgia offense, I don't believe. I think we're going to see things spread out a little bit more RPOs. I think Zamir is going to have to work on catching the ball as well if he wants to be a three-down back. We know that Munkin likes to throw to the backs a little bit. So the other part of it is, how does he fit in the offense and how much work has he done with his pass catch kills in the offseason? But to your point, I would absolutely agree. Zamir White is a guy because Georgia's had the luxury of having a really good 1-2 punch at running back under Kirby Smart, Brian Herrien, and DeAndre Swift now moving on. What does that 1-2 punch look like? We certainly would think that Zamir White would be the one or the two. We don't really know who the other guy is. Not sure what James Cook's role is going to be, or Kenny McIntosh, Kendall Milton. But I do believe Zamir White has to be part of that equation.
So I don't want to talk about Zamir the whole time, but I do want to follow up on what you just said, because you're right. There is obviously, whether it's as much of a transition as I hope it is or something less than that, there is at least some transition taking place with Todd Monken as the new offensive coordinator. But, Mike, I'll add to this. If you look at the impact that Joe Brady made last year at LSU as passing game coordinator, he may have improved Clyde Edwards-Hilaire's stats as much as he improved Joe Burrow. As ridiculous as that sounds, Edwards-Hilaire was a backup running back in the 2018 LSU team. But last season, he's rushing for 1,400 yards. He's catching the ball all over the place. Edwards-Hilaire is, in my mind, not a first-round pick had he not played in a Joe Brady offense. And for as much of a leap as Burrow made to go to the number one pick in the NFL draft, Edwards-Hilaire are going to the first round of the NFL draft ahead of guys, not just Swift, but Jonathan Taylor and some of the other names that you could mention there. I think Edwards-Helaire owes a thank you note to Joe Brady for that. Now, I don't expect as much of a statistical improvement from Monken and in Georgia as I saw from Brady and LSU a year ago, but a better passing attack, I think, makes things easier for Zamir White, because Georgia's still going to run the ball. But if it's a wider, you know, defensive alignment, if there's more of a vertical threat, all the more opportunity for a running back to kind of fill those gaps in the middle there. So a Todd Monken successful offense doesn't just benefit Jamie Newman, the receivers. I think a guy like Zamir White, who I do assume will be the leading rusher next season, I think a guy like Zamir White stands to benefit from that as well.
No doubt. You put DeAndre Swift in that LSU offense, and I think they're every bit as powerful.
I do, too. I think you're exactly right about that. Okay, so we're one for one. Let me reset what we're doing here, because I'm curious to see if you can guess all five of mine. So I say that there are five players who are like swing players for Georgia. They're draft-eligible players for the upcoming season, and if they really pop, it could be a national championship difference for Georgia. For those just joining us, whether radio or video, podcast folks have been kind of listening the whole time here. But for those just joining us, let me give you a couple stipulations. I'm assuming that Newman and the three defensive backs are already top three-round players. Campbell, Stokes, LeCount. I'm going to assume that. I'm assuming that Georgia has a very good offensive line this season, so guys like Jamari Salyer and Trey Hill and Ben Cleveland don't make my list, because the offensive line for Georgia now is something close to a given. You've got a three-year track record there, even with the changeover at coach. I'm also assuming that some of Georgia's best players are not draft eligible. Guys like Nolan Smith, N'Kobe Dean on defense, Dominic Blaylock, George Pickens, maybe Kendall Milton on offense. LSU had freshmen and sophomores last year who were among their most dominant players, even with 14 guys selected. With those three ideas stipulated, there are five guys who I think are swing performers for Georgia. Mike guessed one of my names. That was Zamir White. Mike, you want to give another guess here?
Jordan Davis, the nose tackle. You know, he's so important to control the line of scrimmage. Jordan Davis is a guy, BA, that – you know, you were in on a year and a half ago, right before he really popped. I thought he made the difference on that 2018 team. He really emerged, because there were some issues on the Georgia defensive line in 2018, as good as that team was, that Jordan Davis kind of solved. And really going into the season, you know, really wasn't anywhere to be found as far as a major contributor. In fact, I don't even think he traveled on the first two road trips. So he popped early. And then last year, I thought he followed up. Kirby continues to raise the bar on him. He's not going to talk good about him, but everybody else knows about him. He's the one guy Ed Orgeron noted during the LSU press conference going into that SEC championship game. I think Jordan Davis needs to be a dominator, BA, for Georgia to contend for the championship.
Yeah, Davis is one of my names. You knew he would be. And here's my point about Davis. I want to be as realistic as I can be. I don't think that Jordan Davis is a Derrick Brown-level player. Brown's a five-star coming out of high school. There's a level of quickness that Brown provides that's just a little bit different than Davis. Davis did have 2.5 sacks a year ago, but my ceiling for Jordan Davis is not Derrick Brown at Auburn. However, it is kind of fair to point out that he was not a wildly different recruit coming out of high school than Javon Kinlaw was. Kinlaw was sort of a 300-and-something player in the country, originally an offensive lineman. The recruiting profile, even though Kinlaw was a four-star, is not wildly different than it is for Jordan Davis. The one thing that Kinlaw was good at during his South Carolina career that we haven't seen as much of from Davis yet. Davis is an unbelievable run stopper, and in the SEC, you've got to have that. But Kinlaw also went next level with a pretty large collection of tackles for loss. If you're looking for that breakthrough from Jordan Davis, I think the sack number is likely to improve a little bit. And if you're getting four sacks or so from the interior defensive line, you're not doing too bad if you're Georgia. But that tackle for loss number for Georgia all across the board is just woefully low. They need more tackles for loss. And I think a prime candidate to provide a few of those would be Davis. So how does Davis go from being kind of a fringe draft pick if he were to leave as a junior to maybe someone that does get those like top three round, top 100 selection looks? Can he find a way to improve his tackles for loss, be in good enough shape, add enough quickness that he is making something happen, chasing down plays at times from the interior of the defensive line? I still didn't need to be the space-eating run stopper, Mike, and you know that. But can you improve those tackles for loss numbers just a little bit? That could be a difference for me in Georgia competing for a title and actually winning a national championship.
Yeah, you know, those are the plays, BA, you got to make. At the same time, I look at Kirby's scheme, and it's just not as designed to get those guys vertical. There's so much about containment, so much about gap responsibility and setting those linebackers up. But the bigger and stronger and quicker that Jordan Davis gets, the more opportunities for plays that he does have. The play isn't always there for him to make. You got to understand that with those defensive linemen. I know you understand that, but talking to fans, yeah. You got to understand that those defensive linemen, a lot of time their assignment isn't necessarily to make the tackle. You might say, what are you talking about? It's to occupy and to bounce the play outside or to maintain rush lane so that the quarterbacks can't escape. Now, once you do your assignment, Kirby says, go ahead and party. But assignment first at Georgia. That's why they didn't give up one play BA over 40 yards the final six games of the regular season. It's a sensational stat because we all look at the TFLs and the sacks and we forget Kirby's defenses really don't break that often. But I think Jordan can be that guy. I think he can enter a Derrick Brown contract level in the NFL because he is so big. He's bigger than Derrick Brown. He's a different kind of player. Probably will never post the sack numbers, to your point. But he's every bit as dominant at his position and what his responsibilities are. If he can get a little bit better, as you said, could lead to a championship season for Georgia.
Okay, so you're two for two. You've guessed Amir White. You've guessed Jordan Davis. What we're doing is those swing players, draft-eligible players that if they raise their level of play could lead to Georgia winning a national championship. You want to go for another one?
Got to be Monty Rice. He's the Mike linebacker. Roquan Smith was at the heart of the 2017 defense on what I thought was the best team in the nation. Alabama beat him that night on a fluky play. But Monty Rice is now going to be a third-year starter. Last year was his full season healthy. The year before, he had some injury problems. I think Monty is one of the hardest-working guys this offseason. I know from our conversation with the Senior Bowl executive director, he's high up on that board. That means the NFL is looking at Monty as a first- or a second-day guy. Just being the Mike by the nature of the position, you got to be good. You got to be great up the middle on defense. Monty has gotten progressively better. Not ready to put him in the Roquan Smith conversation, BA, but I think he needs to make even more plays. I think we need to see an interception here and there. More forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. But Monty Rice, a captain, I think he needs to have a big year on defense.
So I could have selected Rice. You make a good case for why, you know, he could have a high draft pick. The reason why I did not choose Monty is this. My vision for Monty is as a dominant run-stopping defensive player in this league. I think that if Jordan Davis is, you know, the most important part of the run stop at the defensive line level, Monty Rice is like that guy behind him, sort of a partner in crime, if you will, doing that the linebacking core. You know, I need for Monty to keep being, you know, solid at doing that for him. And if he does that, he could very well earn a great opportunity in the NFL. I'm looking for guys who I see as a real opportunity to raise their level of statistical performance. So you mentioned the inside linebacker, Rice. I'll give you the two outside linebackers
here.
All right, go ahead.
Azeez Ojulari. Yeah. And it's got to be, well, Jermaine Johnson or Nolan Smith.
Nolan's not draft eligible for next year, but it's Jermaine Johnson, Azeez Ojulari. And here's my thing on this, Mike. Once again, I want to be realistic. I'm not talking about Chase Young for either one of those guys. But Ojulari, who had 5.5 sacks last year, could he match what Yader Grosbatos did for Penn State, who had 9.5 a year ago? Can Azeez find 4 more sacks this year? Similarly, can Jermaine Johnson, can he do what Clavon Chaisson did? Chaisson had 6.5 sacks a year ago. Can Johnson go from 2.5 to 6.5? Can Georgia find 9 more sacks between Ojulari and Johnson, not even counting Nolan Smith in these numbers right now, but a total of 9 more from Ojulari and Johnson? You mentioned before that Georgia has been a solid defense looking to contain offenses, and the sacrifice for that has been the lack of negative plays, tackles for loss, sacks, things like that. Mike, I'm a big believer, though, when you face a team like LSU, if you're not matching their explosive plays with negative plays of your own, eventually you're going to suffer because of that. Georgia's got to find a way to be more disruptive at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage. That's what I'm looking for. Can Ojulari be what Grosbatos was for Penn State? Can Johnson be what Chaisson was for LSU? Those are not unreasonable numbers for guys who had 5.5 and 2.5 between them a year ago. So you mentioned Monty, you make a good case. I'm going to Ojulari and Johnson here because if they find more sacks, that's a huge difference maker for Georgia.
It is. And Azeez was, what, he had 35 or 36 quarterback pressures. I mean, if like you said, 4 or 5 times, he's right there. He's that close. And he's that dominant. I think he's that great of a player. You know, part of it, too, now is if Georgia does open it up on offense, scores more points, that means they're going to be a lot more like the LSU defense on the field more. The LSU defense last year didn't look so sensational. You'll remember early on, people were going, what in the world's going on? And part of it has to do with how the offense marries with the defense.
Yeah.
You just can't have this wide open run and shoot offense and expect your defense to go out there and put up the same numbers because they're playing more snaps and they're playing teams that are going to be more pass oriented and have the potential for more explosive plays against you. And you'll conversely have more opportunities to rush them. When LSU's beating somebody by 35 points, that's going to let their defensive ends pin their ears back and get more sacks. So some of those LSU numbers on defense were circumstantial. And guys like Azeez Ojulari and Jermaine Johnson would benefit from that. My curious, B.A., if, and I wouldn't call it a flaw at all because I think Dan Lanning is tremendous. Obviously, Kirby does too. But how do you get these guys on the field at the same time, right? I mean, we look at the formation, and a lot of times it's Walter Grant on the other side. I mean, put you to sleep, you know. Why couldn't it be a playmaker? Or a lot of times it's 3-3-5. As much as we say it's a 3-4, George actually plays more snaps in that 3-3-5 where we see that star guy, Mark Webb, instead of that other outside linebacker. So some of that's predetermined by the offenses they're playing in the formations. But to your point, I think it's a good point. I just did a story on Jermaine Johnson, Superman, yesterday. And I'm high on Azeez Ojulari. He's one of 7 finalists for Freshman of the Year. I would agree. Both of those guys are potential studs that could go in the first 3 rounds of the draft and have all SEC-type years.
Okay, so we've got 4 of my names. There's one more name from my 5.
Is that an offense?
It is an offensive player.
All right. I'm going to throw this out there. Well, gosh, I know you're kind
of... It's not an offensive lineman because I've stipulated already that I'm assuming you get high-end play from guys like Hill and Salyer and Cleveland.
Well, you keep throwing the Florida State tight end out there, and I know you're high. I would go, even though I think that's probably... I'm going to go with Demetrius Robertson.
It's who I have. I have Robertson.
Okay. And you know what? He hasn't lived up to it yet, B.A., but the hamstring last year... Again, another guy that needs to be taking care of business conditioning. If he shows up in shape and gives Georgia what he gave Cal as a freshman, people would take it right now.
Well, that's my point, too. It's like there is a season in the past where Robertson has exceeded 700 yards receiving. That's against Pac-12 defenses and against an offense that was throwing the ball, you know, I assume every down. So you kind of there's a little bit of an exchange rate when you bring those numbers to the SEC, as you well know. But that's also a baseline. I don't need, once again, the whole theme of all this is realistic expectations. I'm not asking Demetrius Robertson to be Jerry Jeudy, but could he be Henry Ruggs? Robertson's a speedster, much like the way that Ruggs is, although Ruggs may be, you know, among the fastest players in the SEC a year ago. Here are Ruggs' numbers from last year. 746 yards, 7 touchdowns. The 7 touchdowns is high, but D-Rob caught 3 touchdowns a year ago, so he's shown a propensity for getting to the end zone himself. On just, what, I guess 300-something total yards receiving. So he's shown a little bit of a propensity for getting the end zone. The 700-something is something similar to what D-Rob did in a Cal uniform going back to his freshman season there. Now, Ruggs had a better year prior to 2019 that sort of preceded what he did last season, getting a chance to play with Tua Tagovailoa. But I'm not asking D-Rob to be what Jerry Jeudy was as a career. But given the fact that there's going to be a lot of attention on George Pickens, a lot of attention on Dominic Blaylock, given the fact that you and I both assume a good year from Jamie Newman, is it impossible to think that D-Rob could exceed 700 yards receiving, find a way in the end zone the way that he's already kind of shown an ability to do there at Georgia? If he becomes one of those top 3-round wide receivers next year, that's a huge boost to Georgia's national championship hopes.
Oh, no question. He gives them so much on the perimeter, and you've got to have that speed on the perimeter. And that's one thing that last year, talking with Jim Nagy yesterday, he said you could tell that offense was not on the same page. Jake was frustrated with receivers. That's why when Cajun went down, it was such a big blow because that was a guy that Jake had really trusted, and suddenly he's not there anymore. I'll tell you what, if it's not going to be D-Rob, then Jeff Centel intels Jermaine Burton could be that guy because Kirby didn't sign these guys to come sit the bench, and they've got to have better receiver play. The receiver play last year was an absolute undoing, and Jake was not able to overcome that and be enough of a playmaker himself. So you certainly can't ask Jamie Newman to operate if you've got people on the outside that don't know the playbook.
Yeah, so I'll finish with this. I expect a good year, as I said before, from at least one of these freshman wide receivers, maybe even a couple of them. However, if you're looking for someone to take that dramatic leap, it is easier for someone who's been in the program to do that. And Robertson did not have a great year a year ago, but he was involved in the offense a lot more. Robertson wasn't even targeted very much in 2018, was targeted a good bit in 2019, and for whatever reason, a lot of those plays just didn't get made. for whatever reason you want to ascribe to that, but he was on the field, he was targeted, he was involved. That's experience he can use to his advantage. It doesn't mean that he will, but if I'm looking for like that breakout person to go along with what I think I already know Pickens to be, what I believe I already know Blaylock to be, it's easier to assume that for Robertson because as last year's performance in the receiver corps shows you, experience does matter.
It does, and so does his role, and we don't know his role yet, and that's something we've got to find out. Todd Monken has to identify who are the guys that we're going to work to get the ball to in space that can make plays with the ball in their hands. You think back to last season, Georgia receivers, not a lot of yards after the catch. Unless they're running wide open on a broken play, how many times did you see a receiver catch the ball in the open field, make somebody miss, and get yardage? You just didn't see it like you saw at LSU, Clemson, Alabama. They have not had championship level play. Could D-Rob be that guy? You hope so, B.A. He's fought for it. He had to wait. He had to bide his time in 2018 behind some NFL guys. Last year, he had the unfortunate hamstring injury, had to learn how to play physical. He was ill for the spring game. I mean, is D-Rob too frail for a Kirby Smart offense, or is he going to have a healthy offseason and be a magical fit for what Todd Monken brings? And that is a big question, and I'm with you. I think that he's going to be a key player one way or another.
Mike, you did a good job. You guessed them all. I appreciate that. I look forward to reading you at DogNation.com and catching back here on our program, Dog Nation Daily, very soon again as well.
And tell those people to read your columns. You had a couple of knockout home run columns yesterday on DogNation.com.
Yeah, Mike, it's funny. I can barely read, but they'll let me write a little bit, which I guess is probably a pretty good thing for me, I guess.
No doubt about it, man. Thank you, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, I'm going to have some more thoughts in a moment on these five players we've kind of focused in on today's show. Before we do that, let me do the SEC Through. Let me also remind you, this evening, 6 p.m., before the Hedges presented by Kroger returns, Jeff Sintel's been doing an amazing job with that, keeping us all up to date on UGA recruiting. And, of course, it's all brought to you by Kroger. And, by the way, Kroger, every time I go in there, man, it's amazing. Stores, the shelves are stocked. The store is clean. It's just an incredible shopping experience. They have absolutely just rolled out the red carpet throughout all of this with the coronavirus. Obviously, supermarkets more important than ever before. And Kroger, man, they have stepped up to the plate in a big way. And I know many of you are like me. You just love to say thank you. And I think one of the best ways to do that right now is supporting some of the work that Kroger's doing in the community with the COVID-19 Response Fund. It's all being done by the Kroger Company's Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation. They're requesting customer donations right now to help support this, and you can do it. It's very, very easy. When you make a purchase, just round your purchase up to the nearest dollar. That roundup amount goes towards the Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation, the COVID-19 Response Fund. You can also make a donation of $1, $5, or $10 when you're checking out there at the check lanes. So check that out at your local Kroger. And, man, Kroger continues to do great, great work. We'll get back to the regular SEC news of the day tomorrow. There's some more recruiting stuff that's out there. Tennessee, man, they continue to clean up in recruiting, and we should probably pay some attention to that. I want to deal, though, kind of quickly here with two pretty big-picture stories for a moment. And I guess in a roundabout way, they're both sort of relatively controversial. There is huge, huge movement right now in the direction of allowing players to profit off their name, image, and likeness. A lot of this is complicated. I don't completely understand that, but it certainly seems like on a lot of the published reporting that I'm reading that we're heading for this happening. And I've said before that my opinion on letting players essentially be paid, not paid by the schools, but kind of paid by the marketplace, is something that I've almost completely done a 180-degree flip on. Generally speaking, I'm in favor of free market stuff, in favor of, you know, freedom, in favor of that kind of stuff. And it's always seemed weird to me that we would restrict players' ability to just sort of live their lives and be free. That's always been strange to me. And from that vantage point, I've always kind of been in favor of players being able to profit off the fact that they are elite athletes. However, over the course of time, my opinion on this has greatly changed, and one of the main reasons why it's changed is, and I hate to say it this way, I just can't think of another way to word this. I've kind of changed my tune on players profiting off name, image, and likeness because I am very suspicious of the people who seem to be most in favor of this. And the people seemingly, at least the best that I can tell, who are most in favor of this are not the players themselves. Because frankly, if an athlete in big-time college football, and for the most part, those are the guys who ought to be getting paid, if a big-time college football player wants to tell me why he's treated unfairly, I am more than happy to listen to him on that and more than happy to say you've probably got a pretty good case to make. However, there's a certain level of kind of like blue check Twitter media person who kind of makes a living on being aggrieved on someone else's behalf. I won't cite the specific reasons because that has a tendency to get kind of grossly political in a show like this, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And it's those people who seem to be aggrieved on behalf of the players and the degree to which they're in favor of this. I'll just be frank with you. I'm very suspicious of that group, and it makes me not quite think as favorably about profiting off name, image, and likeness as I otherwise would. I think players deserve the money. They're clearly elite athletes. However, some of the people who are so in favor of this seem to want or like the idea, or at least be okay with the idea, of college football as an institution being threatened. They think of college football as sort of an immoral business, and I don't feel that way. I feel like college football would not have survived as long as it has, 150 years, if it wasn't an institution showing value. Not everything about it's perfect, but clearly it's a valuable institution for the coaches, the players who've been a part of it. Otherwise, it would not have survived this long. So, on the basis of what I've read thus far about the way in which this new name, image, likeness, profitability would be kind of implemented, it seems sort of fair to me. At first blush, it seems pretty well grounded in the free market, and I can't really argue against that. But as I said before, the people who seem to want this the most are a group that I'm just sort of suspicious of. Notice how infrequently you hear players arguing for this kind of thing. Current players, even in many cases former players, although it's more likely to hear, I guess, a former player than a current player. And you may say, well, the current players can't say it because they're muzzled by their programs. Well, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. I just think it's very interesting to hear who does the most complaining about this compared to who does the least. And the people who seem to complain about this the most are not people directly impacted by the results of this one way or another. One more story I want to get to related to our SEC through, and I think this is really good news. I've never been more sure than I am right now that college football is going to be played this upcoming fall. Now, is that the right decision or not? Who knows? It's not my place to say that. There's a degree to which these kinds of decisions need to be made individually anyway. How safe do you feel? When do you feel like it's okay to leave your house and kind of get back your business again? There's a certain individual nature to a choice like that. I can't say what's right, what's wrong, what's smart, what's not. All I can say is what I believe is going to happen. I think we're seeing the wheels greased for the return of college football. This is true for two reasons, and I predicted this. The NFL draft was a smashing success. I told you that it would be from a rating standpoint, from just a social connection standpoint. And I said that once it was over, the stranglehold the cable news has had over our country was going to be somewhat alleviated by that. And we're seeing some examples of that. And the draft was so successful that it's obvious and smart that other professional sports entities are now looking to race to fill the void that the NFL draft demonstrated this past week. Major League Baseball working on a return for June. The PGA Tours are already got its situation lined up for a return to tournaments this June without fans. It seems likely that NASCAR is going to be doing something like that with real drivers in real cars sooner rather than later, and then we'll wait and see. But the NHL, the NBA, but professional sports is on its way back, maybe without fans, but games are going to be on television. That's an important domino that has to fall. The other more significant domino, around the country, you're seeing more and more examples of schools saying we plan on having students on campus this fall. And they absolutely, got a right to do that in terms of balancing how do you keep people safe, students that they're entrusted with. You've got to think about that. But they also have a right to protect themselves against financial ruin. And schools not having students on campus this fall for many universities would be disastrous. The universities themselves have a right to think about that. And we're sort of heading in that direction there as well. Georgia made an announcement here on this Wednesday. Mitch Daniels, the president of Purdue, has said something about this. Oregon has come out with a very strongly worded statement. It expects to have students back. So the return of professional sports for now without fans, the return of students, the expected return at many universities this fall, they can all grease the wheels. Now, listen, all this could go wrong at any point in time. You don't need me to tell you all the ways in which, bad news could happen. But on the trajectory we're on right now, I have not felt more confident during this coronavirus lockdown that we're heading towards a scenario where football in some form and fashion has not just played this upcoming year, but played this upcoming fall. And we'll follow that and see how it goes. Now, on the subject for a moment that we began the show with, the five players that I say are kind of like the swing players for Georgia, those players that could determine Georgia's national championship fate. I mentioned outside linebackers Azeez Ojulari and Jermaine Johnson. I mentioned the defensive tackle Jordan Davis. I mentioned the running back Zamir White. I mentioned the wide receiver Demetrius Robertson. And somebody who was watching on Facebook was saying that I was overly optimistic about the individual projections for these players. One of our Facebook viewers, his name is Robert Barnes, said that I was putting a Superman cape on these players. And I don't think that's necessarily true. If you listen to what I said about with Mike Griffith a moment ago, and hopefully you had a chance to hear that, you know, I wasn't trying to make Azeez Ojulari and Jermaine Johnson into Chase Young. That's an unfair comparison to make. But could they have similar statistical performances compared to other guys near the front end of the draft? This wasn't necessarily a great year for edge rushers, but, you know, for, you know, what Clavon Chaisson did for LSU a year ago. Is that unfair to say that's a possibility for a guy like Jermaine Johnson? You know, could Azeez Ojulari take the next step? Even if it's not quite a Chase Young step, probably won't be. Don't think it's too crazy to say you can go from 5.5 to something close to double digits. That gets the attention of NFL scouts, and it helps George in the long run. Same way for guys like D-Rob and Zamir White and some of the others that we're talking about here. You don't have to have great leaps to be greatly more impactful as a player. And frankly, if you can't find justifiable reasons to think that some of your players, those players in kind of that swing category, will take a big leap forward like that, then you're probably going to finish short of the national championship. That's just the way that it goes at big-time college football right now. But for Georgia, every player that I believe I mentioned a moment ago and the statistical threshold I think they need to achieve to kind of be what they need to be, I don't think it's unreasonable for any of them. I'm not asking anyone to greatly transform himself. I'm just asking for a few guys to be a little bit better. Make no mistake about this. I know I've got Michael Jordan on the brain right now because, like so many of you, I'm watching this Last Dance documentary on Sundays on ESPN. What was it that Jordan said? That there's no I in team, but there is an I in win? I think Jordan's right about that. I think team success, especially the college football level, is possible by an accumulation of individual performances. Elite top-end players added together, that's the makings of a great team. And Georgia has the possibility to do that this upcoming season. There are a few players who you just assume that's going to happen for. There are a few more that you hope it's going to happen for. That group from that hopeful category, if enough of them step up, that could be the difference between Georgia simply contending for a title and actually winning one. Fun conversation on today's show. We appreciate you being a part of that here on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, if you're looking for more of what we do, check us out on video every morning at 10 a.m. We'll get back to our normal routine at some point in time. Hope to be back in the studio sooner rather than later. That means regular broadcast available on video. For now, it's a little different version of our show on video, but it's still a ton of fun. R.S. Andrews Cool Down every day. Of course, they provide you with air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric needs. You know, right now, air conditioning systems are back at work again, and they're about to be at work every day coming up in the spring and summer. Is yours working as well as it could? Well, the R.S. Andrews, that team over there, can make sure they get your system back to factory fresh specs. If it's not, it's just $99. You can find them online at rsandrews.com and check us out on video for the R.S. Andrews Cool Down every single day. Let me also remind you of this Gator Hater Updater. We don't like those lousy, stinking Gators around here. We love the fact that Georgia's now gone 1,278 days without losing to them. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.